morning and welcome to Wanda Space, the Black Arts and Culture Room with the African Sisters Media Network. We're going to rebroadcast an interview with Jen Vereen, which was recorded quite a while ago. but it's a really good conversation. It's not going to be at the Razz Room, so don't try to go get tickets or show up. But it's a really good conversation. So we're going to play this. I hope everyone is well. And if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, there is a ritual on December 20th. I'm going to start with a piece by Bree Sharp from his work, In Iowa, tribute to Sojourner Truth. And this is called Catch.
Wicked. I went into the show with Shoshana Dean, and each night I'd hear Shoshana sing this song. I'd like to do it for you now. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time I trust my instincts, close my eyes, and leave. It's time to try defying gravity. I think I'll try defying gravity, and you can't hold me down. Through accepting limits because someone said they're so. Some things I can never change, but till I try, I'll never know. So tired of being afraid of losing love I thought I had lost. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. I'd rather buy defying gravity. Defying gravity, and you can't hold me down. Unlimited, my future is unlimited. And I've just had a vision, almost like a prophecy. Oh, I know this may sound crazy, and it's true. The vision is hazy, but I swear, someday I'll be up in the sky, defying gravity. Yes, I can fly. I'll defy gravity, and you can't hold me down. You can't hold me down.
What I like to know. That is so cool. Well, gosh. Maybe we should talk about what's bringing you out here to San Francisco. You've got a new CD and you've got a new show, and maybe you could tell us about what you're bringing to the Raz Room June 12th.
What I'm bringing to the Raz Room?
Yeah, yeah. What a
greatness.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Give us some details. Who? Because I think you're bringing a band, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
And some new material?
Yes, some new material. And, you know, I'm working on a show that I'm taking to Broadway.
Mm.
So I'll be working on that there. And so it's going to be exciting.
Oh, so you're going to test it out on us. That's great. We love that. Okay. So you're going to be, I believe, sort of bringing back some old favorite tunes and
some
honoring
oldies,
some of your favorite
goodies.
Folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oldies but goodies, yeah. That's...
Oldies but goodies. You know, people that, you know, that we grew up with and have touched my life. You know, people I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sammy Davis, Frank Sinatra, you know, people like that, Bob Fosse, Tom O'Horgan, you know, and Hair. I did Hair, matter of fact, right there in San Francisco.
You did?
The Orpheum Theater, yeah.
Wow.
I came up some time ago, and I found, I discovered a guy named Michael Philip Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And he was doing Burger, so I hired him in Los Angeles, and he hurt his back. And so they called me to come up to the Orpheum Theater to cover for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we, you know, we really got to be good friends years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at the On Broadway Theater where there's No Place to Be Somebody, Charles Gardone's play.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, so San Francisco and I have a history.
Yeah.
I lived in Berkeley for a while.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
Matter of fact, there was a guy named Wasserman, I believe. And he wrote an article on me. I did my first concert at the On Broadway Theater in those years.
Yeah.
And got my launch there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. So you have some dear memories of the Bay Area.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Oh, that's
wonderful. Dear memories.
Wow, that is so awesome. I was reading your lovely, but I just love that caricature of you on your website. It's so cute.
Well, thank you.
And then your photographer, you got some great photographs, you know, when they're sort of, you know, going through the... you know, sort of showing you the different looks of Ben Vereen.
Yes, yes.
Those are really
Thank
nice,
you.
Too. And you've gotten, like, what, 10 doctorates?
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm like, well, you're
I'm
like...
proud of them.
Yeah, wow, I was like, so wonderful. And I was looking at one was from the Medgar Evers College there in
Medgar Evers, yes.
Yeah, is that in Brooklyn? No.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
Brooklyn.
It is Brooklyn, right.
Mm-hmm.
And they sponsor... A ritual every year, the second Saturday in June. It's called Libations for the Ancestors, and it's an international pouring for our ancestors that died or made that passage, you know, during the European slave trade. And
really, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and it's a really
old
celebration.
I'm honored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I thought, wow, how fitting, you know, sort of looking at, you know, your really famous role in Roots. And I was watching some of the segments on Oprah's website. And,
oh, yes, when we did the reunion.
Yeah, yeah, and the part where you talked about how you really wanted to be in the film and how your agent was saying, well, you know, you're a song and dance man. They need an actor.
Oh, yes.
That was funny.
Yeah, I fired him.
Oh, good. You need someone with vision, for sure.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, I was thinking, one, if we could start with, you know, that Chicken George character, and sort of, you know, your preparation, you know, within your life for that role as the child of a rape, and then, you know, sort of being known by that, you know, that bird, the chicken, which is used to venerate the ancestors, and you know, sort of stands for, you know, life, you know, fertility, because every day.
Look at you. You got it all down. You don't need this. If you read, just write it.
Well, you might not agree with me, you know.
Thank you, my queen. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but I just thought about, you know, sort of the whole renewal, and then within your personal life, you know, finding out that you have another family after having the water.
That wasn't until later in years. My baby daughter, Karan, came to me one day and said, Dad, you know, Mom has her history, but we don't, you know, you, and that's it.
Mm.
And I decided to go for my search. It's interesting that I did Roots, and I really didn't have any knowledge of my past until, you know, I went to Europe with Sammy Davis Jr., and he said, you know, you have to get a passport. And I went down to get a passport, and I found out that I wasn't who I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's when my search began. You know, so for me, doing Roots was really interesting because I was doing a part of a story of our legacy, but I hadn't found mine.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite overwhelming. It was quite overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, I was wondering, so when you like you have, it sounded like you had a wonderful, you know, childhood and family that raised you.
Oh, you did. I did. Most definitely. Yeah. Love personified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was interesting because when I found this out, the woman who raised me, Pauline Green,
mm-hmm.
When I found it out and I came back from Europe and I looked at her, and she was really taken by this whole discovery because she would never wanted me to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her and I told her, I said, "You're the only mother I know. You're the only eyes I saw when I looked up, you know, so you're my mom." You know,
mm-hmm.
And so we left it that way. That's what she came and she told me what had happened, you know, and she told me about my mother. And when my daughter said, you know, "Dad, we got to find, you know, who your people are." And we went looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I found them about 4 years ago, 5 years ago now.
Oh, it's been that recent.
Yes, that recent.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is an interesting thing, and I'm writing it in my book, is that they lived an hour. My mother, my original mother, lived an hour away from me, but she didn't know who I was. She went looking for me.
Hmm.
And when, you know, in 1946, when you say, you go to the police and say, you know, I've lost a child, they weren't interested, you know. I'm supposed to be an African-American woman, you know.
Hmm.
So she stayed there 2 years looking for me.
Wow.
And then she went to, she lived in Connecticut, 1 hour away from me. So you got to read the book because it's very interesting about how we got back together.
Yeah.
She's no longer with us, of course.
Right, yeah, she passed.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah, and so how did your mother, you know, your mother, you know, who raised you, how did they find you?
Well, it's a couple of stories. One is that my mother, it's in the book. Yes, read the book.
Okay. I will totally read. I'm not one of those people, you tell me the punchline and I don't listen to the joke.
Yeah,
you tell me the ending and I will still read the book. Don't worry.
Okay, wonderful. Well, what happened was, supposedly my mother, my birth mother,
yes.
They met in a storm. And she was, supposedly, according to the story I got, that she was homeless. And my mother took her to her apartment.
Hmm.
And after I was born, she was sent, the woman left. But that wasn't the story that I found out.
Hmm.
And so when I found out that my mother actually left her with friends there, left me with friends in Miami, went back to look at my sister and brother to take care of her children she had prior to another marriage, and came back and I was gone.
Hmm. Oh,
so that's
okay.
That's the story I got from my family, from
right.
me, you know, the
mm-hmm.
Pearsons.
Yeah. Hmm. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah,
yeah.
And then your character, you know, Chicken George, you know, he goes away and then he comes back and
his family, and then brings his family to freedom.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he tells his grandson the story of that first African.
That's right.
It's like coming full circle, and
that's
and
right.
it so mirrors your real life, doesn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's like,
so
whoa, what's going on here? You know, the synergy, you know,
yeah.
the serendipity.
You know, what's so interesting is that, you know, how I got that role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, out of all the actors, because I wasn't an actor. I'd done Pippin, I'd done Broadway,
mm-hmm.
but I hadn't been in any films or anything like that. And it was fortuitous that the producer happened to be in the audience of one of my shows. I used to do a character called Bert Williams, who, you know, was one of our early performers, great stars,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, suffered the ridicules of prejudice in this country. And, you know, he said, "Yeah, I don't mind being, you know, a black performer." He said, "It's been in America, it's an inconvenience." That was his line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to do a parody on him, which I got ridiculed for, you know, but I used to do a parody on him about the ridiculousness of what we had to go through. And I was doing it in Savannah, Georgia. And I looked up one day, and there was the producer, Stan Margulies, in the audience. And he saw my Bert Williams, and he came backstage and said, "I want you to be my Chicken George." I didn't know who a Chicken George was or what a Chicken George was. I hadn't read the book. And I said, yes, because I'd heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, and I got the role. And it was quite a journey.
Right.
Quite a journey. To this day,
mm-hmm.
we still talk about it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 30-some-odd years later, we're still talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, because it was for you. It was definitely for you in a lot of ways. I mean, and it's probably
yes.
becoming more and more
yes.
apparent why as you know, you have, you know, as the years pass and the moments pass, like, wow, yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about when I read that story about Bert Williams and, you know, you're portraying him, and I thought about you know, the minstrel tradition and
mm-hmm.
and the Scottsboro Boys, you know,
mm-hmm.
on Broadway,
yeah,
you know, as
yeah.
a musical,
yeah.
and reverse minstrel with the black folks wearing white face.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you know this playwright, but you probably do. Her name is, because she's in New York, and you know the folks there, Dale Orlander Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you do know. Okay, well, she's at Berkeley Rep now, doing her Black and Blue Boys, Broken Men.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, and I was just thinking about, you know, your humanitarian work and your lectures around a lot of things about sort of things that encourage young people, particularly young men and women who might not have everything they think they need in their lives to be successful, you know, how to, you know, how to be resourceful.
Well, it's all within you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm,
it's just
yeah.
tapping within you. You know, we look without for everything, but we need to look within, because within is all the resources that we need. You know, recently my last grandchild was born.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Moses. And
Moses.
And
wow.
So I, you know, my daughter gave me my baby grandchild. He's 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting in the room when he was born and put him in my hands, and I watched the pigment coming in.
Hmm.
And it seemed like Spirit was saying, if you need me, I'll be right in here, inside here. And we look outside for it. But within us is all that we need. Within us is legacy. And we teach from within without to go out. And then we have our legacy in us, and all that we need is in Spirit, within us. You know, and that's what I try to teach from when I'm teaching an acting class. So I, you know, teach seminars of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right, yeah. But then, you know, you look at, you know, characters that Dale paints in her current play that she's performing, and these children, oh my goodness, their parents are so broken
mm-hmm.
that...
Mm-hmm.
These kids, I mean, they do look within, and
mm-hmm.
and some of them are able to do some really remarkable things, but then when they become adults, they're still broken. So
mm-hmm.
then they have flashbacks because of that
mm-hmm.
trauma. So what do you do when the support network is not there to help you realize that you need some help to become truly healed?
That you look within yourself,
but there's not enough there because you don't have the tools because you're a little kid.
yes. So around you, you know, I believe that, you know, we're surrounded by angels that support us.
Mm.
Look, I was a kid from Brooklyn. I'm a kid from Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all probability, I should not be who I am today. But one day, I was standing on the street corner. And I'm doing my kid thing. I was about 6 years old, 6, 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman comes walking down the street, you know, my white brother, you know, comes
mm-hmm.
walking down the street. Out of all the kids on the block, he points to me. And he says, is your mother home? And he was a talent scout. And
mm-hmm.
I was playing stickball. I wasn't dancing or singing.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing stickball.
Yeah.
But destiny.
Huh.
And I went upstairs. My mother said, I want him to go to a dance school. She didn't know nothing about the theater. Take him.
Mm-hmm.
Take him, because I want him to have something better than what I've got. And that's how my journey began. It's like, it seems like Spirit calls upon that which will make us who we are today if we're open and receptive to it. But how do we teach that to children? When they, you know, they're from families that do not have the resources to believe in themselves, to know that it's going to be all right because they've come to the planet to make it better. How do we give them those resources and teach them that? You know, we teach them how to make a living, but we don't teach them how to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, churches are doing the best job that they can, you know, by relating, you know, well, you know, things are going to get better, you know, when you get to heaven, you know. But what about bringing heaven to earth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what these children come, they bring us heaven by just being here on this earth. They bring a baby, a child born is heaven on earth. And then we educate them.
Yeah, yeah,
enlightening them,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
enlightening them, you know. So I try to, in my teachings, is try to touch that within them to let it express itself And from that basis, that's where I work when I teach classes.
Mm-hmm.
Within out, not from out in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, if you could talk about, you know, your attraction to storytelling via performance art, and how you've used, your personal journey to inform your ethos.
To excuse me?
Your ethos.
My ethos?
Yeah, your ethics, you know, your principles, you know, how...
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have a really extensive and long and very well decorated, you know, insofar as all the different kinds of awards one can receive and honors one can receive, you know, career. And you're still going strong. I mean, like, seriously. So, you know, a lot of times people don't last in the business of entertainment because there are a lot of distractions.
I feel blessed.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say it's something greater than myself.
Mm.
Without myself, I probably wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. So something greater than myself makes me get out of bed in the morning. Something greater calls me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just have to give honor to that within me. You know, that which keeps me going, as long as I'm here on this planet called Earth, you know, something within me greater than myself is the reason why I do what I do. And I give honor and praise to that. Call it God, Allah, Jesus, Elohim, Yahweh, whatever you choose to be great divine, it works.
Right. Yeah. So this attraction to storytelling, you tell storytelling, you tell stories.
I do.
Yeah. And talk about that storytelling. I mean, that's real basic to the human, you know, species.
You know, Alex Haley was a storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, I just tell stories of my life, and hopefully somebody will be inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the stories that I have to tell. And so I tell from a place of knowing. And in doing so, you know, somebody says, I get it. And then I feel that my job is being done. When I do my show and doing songs, I try to tell the story that is personal to me. And somebody out there is having a similar situation.
Right.
And they can go, oh, I get it. And so that's why I love what I do, because I'm able to touch people as they touch me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a give and take sort of show. we share.
Right. Yeah.
I've had some wonderful mentors.
Along
my path, you know. So I'm just, and they're still coming.
Mm.
They're still coming, you know. And I get to share with people. I get to share with people like Usher. I get to share with people like Terrence Howard. I get to share with people that Big Boy and those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I get to share with the young people today.
Right. I was reading Harry Belafonte's memoir. Which is, that's an endeavor. I don't know if yours is like 700, almost 800 pages long. Is your book that long?
Well, it may be long. It may be one page.
But it was a fabulous journey. My song and in his book, I just love these type of journeys because he's lived long enough for it to be, you know, sort of really epic, and so you're reading a history book as lived by this person, and similarly, when one reads your book, you know, as you're writing, one is going to be reading a history book through your life, which makes it a lot easier to remember because we'll be identifying with you, and we like you, so we'll remember the details.
Thank you, my queen. Thank you.
Yeah, so... So why don't you tell us about, give us some stories. I mean, you know, you've had like some of your mentors are no longer with us, and some of the folks you hung out with, Gregory Hines, Sammy Davis Jr.
Gregory.
Oh, my
Gregory.
Goodness, they're not with us anymore. Yeah, Nina Simone, Gregory. You know?
Yeah, well, Gregory.
Yeah.
Gregory. I went and saw Gregory in Jelly's last year. Prior to, it was 92, '96 when I had my accident.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, started working to get myself back at Kessler back east, up in Jersey, it was my birthday that year.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see a show. So I said, I want to see Jelly's last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see the show. And Gregory and Savion Glover and the cast just did a magnificent job. And after the show was over, you know, Greg was standing there taking his bow. And he stopped his style, and he said, he introduced me in the audience. And then he came up and he said, listen, Ben, if you can get ready, Keith David is leaving the show. Come this way.
Hmm.
Come this way. And at the time, I could hardly lift my leg. I mean, I had a trach. And they had taken my spleen. I had a broken leg. I had a stroke on my right side. He said, if you can be ready, come this way. And I got there. I opened that show.
Wow.
I opened that show. And people and the doctors would say things like, you know, when I first had the accident in 1992, had the accident, the doctor said, it's going to be at least 3 years before you'll ever walk again.
Hmm.
And as far as his career, I think he should think about another career. So when he sent the occupational therapist to work with me on my motor skills, I didn't know what an occupational therapist was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were people to show me how to get a new job.
I thought so, too, until right now,
no? Exactly. Occupational therapy. Occupation, right?
Right.
Show me how to get a new job. Because he's telling my doctor, telling me, you'll never work in show business again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a trach. You know, I took my spleen. Mm-hmm. I had a broken left leg. I had a stroke on my right side. I mean, that was done.
Yeah.
But the letters and the prayers that came through were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me encouragement. You know, and then Gregory said, come this way. And that was a green light.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 months later, after my accident, I walked on stage in Jelly's Last Jam.
Wow.
And all the doctors who said it would be 3 years before I'd walk again and get my career, mm-hmm. they were sitting in the audience with their mouths gaped open. And Lexus sponsored my comeback.
Mm.
And it was packed. The place was packed.
Wow.
Packed. I mean, standing room.
Yeah. Had you been driving a Lexus when you had the accident?
No.
Oh.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, I hadn't.
Mm.
I was driving a Corvette. And they didn't sponsor me, so I don't drive Corvettes anymore.
Yeah, they should have like sponsored you totally. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, that is amazing, though. So I guess that sort of really shows a person that if you have something to strive toward, it makes it, I mean, the journey was difficult getting from being injured to becoming, you know, well enough to be able to do what you loved again.
Yeah, you know what it was? For my, you know, usually in the program, the playbill,
mm-hmm.
you put your bio, right?
Right.
So when they asked me what my bio, I said, for my bio, put footprints.
Mm.
So those who are reading, when they see me on that stage, they know how I got there.
Yeah.
You know the story of footprints, right?
It was that
within me carrying me.
Mm-hmm.
It was the God of my understanding carrying me.
Right.
And when I was going through all the turmoil and all the heartbreak and all the broken body and my world was torn apart,
mm-hmm.
and I turned and I said, well, you know, you promised you'd be with me when I got into this journey. You said you'd always be with me. He said, when you went through that whole thing, it was me carrying you through the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't of your own cognizance. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I could praise and thanks.
Praise and thanks. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And then your daughter, one of your daughters was in a really horrific car accident,
yes,
right?
Yes, I lost a daughter.
Was that before yours or after yours?
Yes, before mine.
Wow. Yeah.
That took me on a spin.
Mm-hmm.
That took me right out. It's still this day, you know. I've learned to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Any bereaved parent out there knows. You know, you learn to live with it, but you never get over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a part of your heart that's open. There's a hole.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hole there.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Wow. Yeah, I was, you know, again, looking at your wonderful website, and I wanted you to talk about, you know, some of your projects, and then I want to go back to Sammy Davis Jr. and Nina Simone, because, like, you know, you're an insider.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, like, right, so I want you to tell us some stories, but I want you to talk about, you know, Stand for Diabetes. That's a great commercial that you have on your website.
Thank you. Well, Stand for Diabetes, I was diagnosed in 2007, and I didn't know what had happened, you know, what was going on, and I collapsed, and I was with my daughter. She said, Dad, she started saying, Dad, you're hitting all thrusters. You know, I said, you know, I'm fine, and I collapsed after doing a speech,
mm-hmm.
and so she takes me to the hospital. This is my baby daughter, Karan,
mm-hmm.
And so we go in the hospital. They say, well, you know, your blood sugar's a little high. We'd like you to stay overnight, and so we can, you know, monitor you. And I said, well, you're my blood. You let me go. They said, no, you gotta stay overnight. Mm-hmm. So I stayed overnight, and I was going doing my thing, you know, in the hospital. Next morning, they came in and they said, you got type 2 diabetes. And I said, and I looked at the guy in the bed next to me. I said, oh, shame, you got type 2 diabetes, because I know they're not talking to me. I'm Ben Vereen. I don't get diabetes. Mm-hmm. They said, no, you got type 2 diabetes. And the thing about it is that, you know, when you don't know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so right away, the panic jumps in. You know, you hear about amputation, and you hear about death, and you hear all these things flash through your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it flashed through my mind. You know, oh, my God, how am I going to perform? How am I going to be back on stage? How is my life going to be? I'm going to have to be, because I played a character in Webster some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had the big needles,
yeah.
And the guy had to do, you know, the character had to do insulin, and, you know, the characters thought that he was a drug addict because he had his insulin kit.
Right.
And so I'm looking, I'm flashing back on the Webster. I'm saying, oh, my God, I have to be shooting up with a needle. People don't think I'm a junkie. You know, I went this whole thing in my head until I went to my doctor,
mm-hmm.
and he said, no, you can live with this. Mm-hmm. He said, change your eating habits. And he said, what? He said, yeah, just change your eating habits. He said, exercise. That's when I exercise.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and we're going to put you on insulin. They put me on insulin. I said, is that all it is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, change my eating habits, exercise, and insulin? I mean, do my medication? He
mm-hmm.
said, yeah. So I went to a company called Sanofi.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, I want to get out there and talk to the community and let them know I can get diabetes. And it's such a high rate. At that time, there were 23 million people living with diabetes in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's 26 million. So I want to get on a campaign, and I want to let people know we can beat this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why I started a website, Stand for Diabetes Support,
mm-hmm.
you know, to let people know we can beat this. You know, it's a simple thing. Change the dialogue around. Stop telling yourself that you have a challenge. No, you have an opportunity,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity towards better health. You are not suffering. You're living with diabetes. And once you change your dialogue about it, you'll start doing the things that are right for your body temple, what you've been blessed with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll stop eating, you know, you'll start eating the proper things for your body. You'll drink more water. You'll exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'll do your medication. If you're on medication, if you're on insulin, do your insulin.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can live a good life with it. And if America would take the regimen of people living with diabetes to exercise more, eat the proper foods, we'd have a healthier country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have, like, I mean, we're from 23 to 26 million people in this country now living with diabetes.
Yeah.
And if we look at our young people, the obesity
mm-hmm.
is off the charts.
Yeah.
So I have to get out there. I have to get out there for my young people and for the health of the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been given this for a reason, this diabetes. I've been giving it for a reason, not to sit back and feel sorry for myself, but to get into the battle
mm-hmm.
and run front, head on, and say, we can defeat this
yeah.
as a people when we come consciously together and stop being the people. I feel like people live with diabetes like it's like us, a Dr. Seuss's The Who.
Mm.
You know, we're the Who. The people living with diabetes are like the Who. Nobody knows we're here. We're screaming at American Diabetes are out there. Everyone's doing it. Conferences and everything. There's TOYC, which is also a company that I went to. I said, you've got to help me get the message out there. And I teamed up with them. And, you know, and they're out there. But how many people know about it? Then we say, we wonder why our country is feeling ill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the information. We got to turn the dialogue around. As soon as a person can go, yes, amputee happens. I'm not negating that the terrible, horrible things happen. Yes, amputee happens. Yes, death will happen. Yes, all these horrible things happen. But here's the good news.
Mm-hmm.
If we turn our consciousness around, we could do something about it in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
You know, and we'll save our children. We'll save our tomorrow, our generation. Diabetes will go away in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely can.
It can.
It really can. I mean, there are certain types of diabetes that really can go away. And like
yeah.
you said, it's you know, what you eat and also your attitude, and the exercise is so important because it has to do with circulation. And a lot of times the amputation happens because we're not moving enough.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and those people living with type 1, you know, I love the story where this kid talks about the fact that, you know, he wouldn't go out. because of the fact that he had to take his insulin, and he had type 1. Mm-hmm. He saw his team type 1, and they were cycling guys who cycle around team type 1. They're amazing. And he saw them on TV, and he told his mother, he said, "Mom, I'm going to go to the park." And she said, "You sure?" He said, "Yeah." He went to the park, and he's sitting there, and he had to take his insulin shot, check his blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And the kid from across the park saw him mm-hmm. and came running over, and he looked, and he said, "You have diabetes." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I have diabetes, too." Because of the fact that he came out mm-hmm. and was not ashamed that he had to check his blood sugar. Mm-hmm. Another kid who had to check his blood sugar became, you know, okay with it.
Right.
And I want to get into the school system. I want to get into the young people.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids who are living in school with diabetes, they should be supported and become examples of good health.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to exercise, they have to eat the proper foods,
right.
and they've got to do their insulin if they're on insulin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It sounds simple to me. You want a healthier country, it sounds mm-hmm. simple to me.
Right, yeah, and it sort of goes right into a lot of our schools having, you know, gardens for the children, so they're growing
mm-hmm.
good, they're growing
exactly.
fresh food
exactly.
and eating more vegetables.
Mm-hmm. We need to embrace that.
Yeah.
We need to embrace that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of, you know, the diabetes comes from not having fresh food, you know, eating
exactly.
a lot of processed food. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Oz has a group called Health Corps,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I'm partnering with,
uh-huh.
because they are in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're getting kids to think about health better, you know, better health.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking that, you know, you use, you know, these potentially, you know, heartbreaking or negative news, you know, as an opportunity.
Yes, exactly. Because what happens is when you throw out the negative and you try to frighten people, you know, you try to frighten them. Oh, you're going to have diabetes. And you're going to take your leg. Oh, and all these horror stories. Instead of telling them, you can live with this.
Mm-hmm.
You can live with this. All you got to do is exercise more. All you got to do is your medication, if you're on medication,
mm-hmm.
and watch what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to eat all that sugar.
Right.
You know, you don't have to eat the whole cake and be a slice of it, a thin slice. You know, get the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Be moderate.
You know?
Yeah.
Moderation. and with the obesity today with young people,
mm-hmm.
we've got a job on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
A big job to make our country healthier
mm-hmm.
and make the world a healthier place.
Right.
Not
right.
just America, it's the world.
Mm-hmm.
26 million in America, 7 million who are living with it and don't even know they have it. And every 21 seconds, somebody else is diagnosed with diabetes.
It's a lot of people.
We've got a job ahead of us.
Yeah, certainly.
We can do this. We can do this.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And then, you know, they...
Tell them to go to my website, stanfordiabetes.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stan, S-T-A-N-D for diabetes,
yes.
definitely. Yeah, and also there have been some alternative treatments, like, you know, the raw food diet
exactly.
has really helped, you know,
exactly.
some people like not even need insulin
exactly.
or need less medicine. Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a vegetarian. I raised my hand.
Oh, wow.
I'm a member.
That is so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But that's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
my choice. It might not be the choice for that person who's living with diabetes next door.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They may need something else for their diet. I'm not saying that my choice is my decision to be, you know, eat, you know, vegetarian or raw is right. It's right for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Hmm. So, are you gonna come out with a cookbook after you come out with your memoir?
Probably so.
Oh, that'd be great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I was trying raw. I think I was in raw for like about a month, 6 weeks, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm gonna have to just be vegan right at the moment because I don't know how to cook enough, and I've been hungry.
Uh-huh.
Gotta...
You know, yeah, but there are cookbooks or you know preparing books
mm-hmm.
to show you. It's a whole school.
I know. I'd rather just hire somebody. Just come in and cook my meals for the
week. Yes, there you go.
Fix my meals for the week.
You know, well, that's what I do. I don't really prepare my foods. I go to a vegan restaurant around the corner. I get me a week's supply of food, and I'm fine.
Okay. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
when I'm on the road, you know, and see, being on the road is another thing,
mm.
because on the road, you can't find, you know, the foods that I eat in everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I eat a lot of salads. You know, I choose what I choose to, you know, to eat.
Yes.
And I usually carry what I need with me.
Mm-hmm.
That's my choice. That's my choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to get your own.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I found when I was traveling, like when I go out of the country, mm-hmm. one of my suitcases just has food, like nuts and mm-hmm. supplements and this and that.
Yes, because when I fly, I say, you know, give me a vegan plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I have a chance to order, that's what I do. If I don't, I take my nuts and I take, you know, my
mm-hmm.
food that I eat.
Yeah.
You know? I look at the person next door and they got all that, you know, and that's for their choice of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not judging anybody.
Right.
What's right for me is right for me. What's right for them is right for them. And let's all get up the mountaintop together. Don't hurt nobody on the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Don't kick anybody off the mountaintop.
Right. No, there's room for all of us, that's for sure.
Exactly.
You know? Wow. So tell us about some of your mentors and folks.
Sammy,
that, yeah.
Sammy, Frank, mm-hmm. all the boys, you know, mm-hmm. Nina Simone and, mm-hmm. you know, and all those people, Diana Ross, Calvin McRae.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Those are people I grew up on, you know, mm-hmm. Etta James.
Wow.
Ray Charles.
Yeah.
Wow. The list goes on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, right across the street from me, had I known when I was a child, I'd have paid a little bit more attention, mm-hmm. because it was a shoeshine parlor.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, you had the Blue Law in Brooklyn, right? Uh-huh. That meant there was no alcohol on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
All the liquor stores shut down. So all the deacons from the churches would line up at Tip Tap and Toe to get their shoes shined. I used to find that strange until I found out that Tip Tap and Toe was a vaudeville act.
Mm.
And they used to tap dance while they would shine shoes.
Yeah.
And they'd pop their rags and they'd put on a show, you know, for the deacons when they came in to get their shoes shined, and they served them little Dixie cups. And I thought it was water, but it was liquor.
Oh, the deacons had liquor on the Blue Sunday?
Oh, yeah. They'd stack up on liquor, you know, on a Friday and Saturday. And
uh-huh.
put it in the back. And then they'd sell little Dixie cups or shots of liquor before the deacons with the church.
Wow.
While they got their shoes shined. But they would put on a show. They'd pop their rags and they would dance. And those kids used to press our nose up against the window and watch them in awe.
Mm.
They'd play jazz and they'd dance like that, you know?
Wow, that's really cool.
I've had people like that in my life.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had a man, you know, Flip Wilson, my God.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Slide. And, you know, I've had some amazing people touch my life. You know, Sandman Sims used to travel around with me trying to show me how to tap. I'm a jazz dancer. You know?
Mm, yeah.
Like he would travel around with me. I mean, these are amazing. Trainers. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, you know?
Wow.
Della Reese. I just went to her house the other day.
Oh, yeah. She was here at the Razz Room.
Yes, I love Della.
She is,
you know,
wonderful.
Matter of fact, she gave me a script. She wants me to work on a director for her. You know, so I'm working on that. You know, people have touched my lives.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Wilson.
Oh,
you know,
really?
Jimmy Smith. My God. Nancy, come on. You know?
Mm.
Jesus.
Oh,
little,
wow.
Little, I mean, amazing. Amazing. Teddy James.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, the legacy goes on and on. You know, the Temptations,
mm-hmm.
the OJs. Oh, man. You know, the Trineers, as I said. You know, when I came to Vegas, I saw, I mean, and it was, I was opening for a guy named Alan King.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, there was a guy named Buster Keaton. And they had a big, huge fan on the stage at Caesar's Palace, and he'd just stand there and lean into the wind. That was his act. Oh, it was hysterical. Chubby Checker was right across the street.
Mm.
And this little kid from Brooklyn, my first time in Vegas, when it was a desert, when Vegas was Vegas. Now it's, you know, Disneyland for adults. You know,
yeah.
In those days, it was Vegas.
Mm.
And I'd just hang out with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
We'd sit around the table, and I'd sit around. I was playing the Riviera, and I'd sit around the table, and there was Bill Cosby, Richard Pryor, there was Chickie Green, there was Flip Wilson, there was Don Rickles, and they'd be sitting around trying to out-joke each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd start at like 4 and 5 in the morning, and they'd be there till 10 o'clock, and your sides would be hurting. Hurting.
Wow.
You know, this is the legacy that I come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sammy Davis.
Yeah.
My God, Sammy, you know. Oh, God, he touched my life. Oh, he touched my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we met on the set of, I met him in Vegas. I tell the story in my act.
Mm-hmm.
But we met in Vegas. And he once said, you know, if you want to get this business, come talk to me. And then we met again on the set of Sweet Charity.
Right.
But then he took me to London with him. And that's when I found my family, of course. But You know, we went to London. We did Golden Boy in London. And hanging out with him was an amazing, amazing, amazing journey.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I've been really blessed. Mm-hmm. I've had some wonderful people in my life. The list goes on and on and on and on. When I was in high school, I went to a school called the Bernice Johnson's Dance School.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernice Johnson one day said, I want to take my dance troupe over to Pittsburgh. And we're going to do the first Pittsburgh Jazz Festival. Mary Lou Williams put it on.
Wow, Mary Lou Williams?
Put it on. And on the show was Dakota Staton, Jimmy Smith, Thelonious Monk, Harold Betters, and the list goes on, Joe Williams. And he was at Mom's Mabley. And I'm in the wings watching these cats.
Yeah.
I'm like blown away. I mean, it was amazing. Some Dakota Staton. Whew. Oh, that's a legacy I come from.
So wonder you're so great. You got like all these models. Like, okay, well, you know what greatness is.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, because I just think about our young folks. Mm-hmm. The reason why they don't live up to their potential is because they don't know who they are. Because if they knew who they were, they would say, "Oh, this is beneath me. I can't do that."
Well, we don't teach them that, do we?
No.
No. We teach them how to make a living instead of how to live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Wow. And Red Fox.
Red Fox. Oh God. Yes. Red Fox and Shecky Greer, all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Wow. So have things gotten easier for you?
Pig Meat Markham.
Oh, for real? Wow.
Yeah. Mom's Mabley. I told you, Mom's Mabley.
Yeah.
There was this gorgeous woman walked into the Pittsburgh Jazz Festival.
Mm-hmm.
She was gorgeous.
Mm.
And she walks into her room, and Mom's Mabley walks out.
Oh, man.
Now, that'll blow your mind. Mm. This gorgeous woman walks in, and then she goes in the room and gets into this character and walks out as Mom's Mabley.
Mm. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Flip Wilson,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I said, you know.
Yeah.
Garfield Cambridge.
Oh, wow.
You know, all these cats, you know. I knew all these guys. Mm. Brock Peters, you know. I knew all these cats. And, of course, Gregory Hines, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the
Hines brothers, Hines and Dad.
Mm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
These are all the guys that I grew up under, you know, watching these guys.
Mm.
Just blown away. And I wasn't in the theater. You know, the first show I did was a show called The Prodigal Son.
Mm-hmm.
Out of high school.
Uh-huh.
It was directed by a woman named Vinette Carroll. I don't know if you know her.
Mm-hmm.
She's an African-American woman. And she directed a show called Your Arms Are Too Short, The Box of
Bob. Oh, yeah. That's famous.
And she did The Prodigal Son. And one day I was leaving the theater, and this guy walks up to me, and he says, where's the men's dressing room? And I said, well, it's back there. And he looked at me, he said, you're Benjamin Vereen, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, my name is Langston Hughes. He said, can I buy you dinner? And we became good friends.
Langston Hughes? Are you serious?
Langston Hughes.
Oh, my God.
He invited me up to his place in Harlem, and he sat there and he gave me two of his books, I Wonder As I Wander and The Big Sea.
Oh.
And he told me stories.
His travel books.
Yes. Langston Hughes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Do you still have the books?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I do.
My God.
Matter of fact, my daughter collects all my stuff because I'm traveling so much. She just holds on to things.
That's
a collector.
Good.
She's a filmmaker, Karan.
Oh.
And so she holds on to things for me, you know. So, you know, she and my grandson, they live with me now, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, my God. Langston Hughes.
Langston Hughes, yes.
Oh, did you know James Baldwin, too?
Excuse me?
Did you know James Baldwin, too?
Oh, yes. James Baldwin and I sat together in Paris. Where was it? It was the south of France.
Yeah, because that's where Nina Simone lived, too, in south of France.
Yes, it was. And I was in a club, and George Shearing and James Baldwin, we were all sitting at the table. That was the night that Princess Grace came to see my show at the Sportsman's Club.
Wow.
And I was flying home, and I was flying from France back to the United States, and I read the paper. That's when she came to see me, and she died. She had that accident, Princess Grace.
Yeah.
And I did a show called The Night of 100 Stars. I know, I'm giving you a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm just even dying at the mouth now. You open the floodgate now. But I did a show called The Night of 100 Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Cohen wanted to have 100 stars on the stage at Radio City. He got over 200.
Wow, nice.
I mean, I'm walking around and, you know, people say, you know, I'm hearing, hi, Ben. And I'm in the elevator and there's Paul Newman and you know, and Joanne Woodworth and Sammy Davis, Frank Sinatra, and there's Lon Chaney, there's Douglas Fairbanks Jr., you know, and so we do this picture, you know, on these raptors, all the stars, there's 200 some odd stars. Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful woman was trying to make it down these steps. And so I reach out a hand to my hand, and I get down to the bottom of the stairs, and she turns to me, she says, thank you, Ben. And it was Princess Grace.
Oh.
Yeah, my knees went weak. And then it comes to find out she came back to see me when I was in France, in her hometown. You know, so I met her, you know, Prince Rainier and all those people.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a wonderful, wonderful, thankful life.
Mm.
Thankful. I'm so thankful to my God, my understanding that has allowed me this opportunity, the opportunity to talk to you.
This has been really wonderful.
You, and your journey. This is beautiful. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
You.
This has been wow, and wow, the audiences are going to just be in for such a treat.
I'm so excited about coming back to San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, I came to San Francisco driving a mail truck.
Really?
In the 60s. It was a 1954 mail truck, and I lived in it.
You lived in it?
I lived in this mail truck, and I parked behind the Orpheum Theater to do air.
Huh.
And one morning I woke up, and I was being towed away.
While you were in there?
Yeah, while I was in the truck.
Oh, man.
That's how I first came to San Francisco.
Wow, San Francisco, I mean, they tell you now. They were telling people then, too, huh?
Yes, they were. And I got an apartment. And I ended up, doing No Place to Be Somebody there by Charles Gardeau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I heard about, No Place to Be Somebody, because Lorraine Hansberry Theater, it has a new home now right there on Post.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. So you know Stanley, you knew Stanley Williams and Quentin Easter then?
Yes, yes. Back
okay.
In the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, this is amazing. So it's really interesting. You're going to be here June 12th through 17th, just 1 week. And I could just see how each, if I mean, I know you're going to have your routine, but you could actually start out on at one point and then just the course of the week, leave off where you left off and just keep on going with the story.
We're going to have a party. I'm excited about coming home to San Francisco.
Yeah.
My city by the bay.
So who are you? Who's your band? Are you bringing your own people?
Yes, I'm bringing David Loeb on the keyboards. I'm bringing a fantastic cast. Been with me for years. Mark DiGiani on drums, and a guy named Tom Kennedy on the bass.
Nice.
And if you're lucky, my son will perform.
Your son
plays djembe.
Oh, seriously.
If you're lucky.
Oh, okay.
He's gonna come up the last night because we're going from there to Australia.
Oh.
And from Australia, we're going to New York City. And so I'm working on a show, which we're going to be working on in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taking it to Australia. And then we're coming back to Broadway and to open the thing called 54 Below. And then that's the start of a show, which we're calling The Last of the Showmen, which we're going to bring back to Broadway next season.
Wow, that's really something. So you're still working it when you go to Australia?
Yes.
You're still fine-tuning it.
Still refining it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're gonna blow it out and do a bigger rendition of the show for next season.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to bring it back to San Francisco.
Oh, that would be so nice.
So we're praying for it because it's going to be really. I get to pay tribute to all the wonderful people who've touched my life and talk about what it was like and what it is like. I get to touch some wonderful people. You're my godsons, Usher. I get to touch, Big Boy and all these cats.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool, that, what was that film, Idlewild.
Idlewild,
yeah. And then there was another one, too, where you actually, you were able to to share, you know, voice lessons and acting techniques and things like that, and basically sort of intergenerational kind of sharing, you
yes,
know, being
yes.
being the elder, you know, and having, you know, youth or younger artists that are interested in
yes.
In this living legacy that you embody.
Well, thank you. And I just want to pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mine to keep.
Yeah. So when's your book coming out?
As soon as the play comes out next year.
Okay.
We'll try to make it the same time.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, we've been looking for that. Maybe I can have you on again to talk about that.
I'd like that very much.
Oh, cool. And I'm so looking forward to you when you come to town with your Stepping Out with Ben Vereen. That's going to be really cool.
That's
the Razz Room at Hotel Nico. All right,
you.
Super. Well, until then, got a couple of weeks. You know, safe travels and you know, good luck in all of your endeavors. And thank you so much for this great conversation. It's been so fun.
Thank you.
All right. You take good care.
Have a wonderful day. Okay.
You too. Peace and blessings. Bye bye.